couple of weeks ago, thousands of people visited the Mexican tall ship, the Cutamoc, when she was in port in Dublin. This weekend, there's another tall ship in port, the Eye of the Wind, a sail training vessel from Germany. She's not open to the public, but Seascapes got to visit earlier today, where I had the pleasure of meeting her skipper, Pitt Schmidt, and her crew, to hear about the ship and the sail training program.
Yeah, my name is Pitt. I'm from Germany, born in Switzerland. I'm the captain here on this vessel.
It's the Eye of the Wind. You're here in Dublin for the weekend. Tell me something about it.
The Eye of the Wind is a very, very beautiful sailing vessel. It's a 110 years old. She's known from Hollywood movies like The Blue Lagoon, and there's another movie, I don't like it. It's the White Squall, because the ship is sinking.
That's
there,
right.
In this movie. So, and there is many other movies, I forgot the names.
So she's a two-masted tall ship.
She's a brig. She's a two-masted brig. And yes, she's a tall ship.
Tell me something about her history.
She's a 110 year old. She was built in Germany. And she was a cargo sailing vessel when she was built. I think she hadn't any engine when she was built. And after a couple of years sailing for the German owner, she was sold to a Swedish owner, and she provided the butter on the bread for many Swedish families back then.
How do you mean?
Butter on the bread. So eat a herring on the bread without butter. It's not sticking on.
Okay, but it's a phrase I'm not familiar with.
I'm sorry for my bad English.
Does it mean that it provided a living for people?
Yes, it provided a living for the people. The butter on the bread. It's like you have the dry bread and the bread with butter.
Okay, so where does she sail?
She was sailing mainly in the Baltics and in the North Sea, and she went fishing up to Iceland. And that's it. That was the trading area.
And what's her recent history? She's now a sail training vessel?
It's a private owner in Germany. He's running a big company. His passion to run this old ship. We have young people coming here, and they learn how to sail, and they learn how to behave and how to clean, and how to, like, getting part of the whole thing, of the crew.
How long does somebody, a young person, typically spend on board?
We want them to stay 3 months on board.
3 months?
Yes.
Okay, it's quite a long time.
No, it's not. After 3 months, they just know how to do and what to do. Mm. And then they leave us again. And then we get new ones.
What age are they, and where do they come from, those young people?
They're coming from all over the world right now. We have trainees from Sweden, from Germany, from Slovakia, and from Canada.
Yeah, and where have you been in the last few months?
I rejoined the ship in Norway, and we were sailing to Shetland and to Faroe Islands, to the Orkneys, and then through Scottish waters, the Outer Hebrides, and now here.
The wilds of the North Atlantic, pretty wild up there.
It was rainy. We wish they have more global warming.
How long, what are you doing when you're in Dublin? But you're having clients come to visit you.
Yes, we have guests leaving, and we have new guests coming. We are also carrying guests, 12 guests. We have cabins for 12 guests. They are providing the butter on our bread.
Okay, that's very good.
Hi, my name's Esme. I'm the cook on Eye of the Wind. I am from Shropshire, and I'm actually the only British crew member.
How long have you been with her?
I joined just under 2 months ago, so it's a new position for me. But I've been cooking at sea for the last 3 or 4 years. But I have to say, she is a beautiful ship. We've got a crazy crew, as you've heard from our captain. We like to have an easygoing time here.
How do you get into a career like that, being a cook or a crew on a ship like this?
I can tell you, for me, it was kind of an accident. So I took voluntary redundancy from my job, and I decided to use the money to learn how to sail. And so I started sailing on tall ships and then volunteering, and I was crossing the Bay of Biscay, and the cook got really, really ill, and they needed someone to take over, and they knew I liked cooking, so they asked me to step in, and then it just kind of spiraled out of control from there, and I just started getting jobs, and here we are a few years on.
And are you going to make a career out of this? Are you going to keep going from one ship to another, or do you know?
I'd like to stay here for a while, for sure. I mean, I'm sort of the opinion that you can do many things in your life, so I'm happy right now, but I'm sure something else will come along at some point.
You're the first mate, you're Moritz?
Yes, I'm Moritz.
Tell me, we're going to take a walk around the ship, tell me.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, here's the foredeck, obviously. You can always hang around here, but if you're sailing in the North Sea on the Atlantic Ocean, this is the place where you can get really soaked as well. Or you can walk aft and hang around on the aft deck, in the monkey poop deck, laying in the sun and enjoying your free time.
How many people do you typically carry on board?
Let's say normally we are around 20 persons on board.
Okay, so how many crew and how many trainees?
It's half-half. Okay. So it's around 9 to 10 crew. Sometimes 8, but mostly we are 9 crew and up to 12 guests on board.
What's it like getting these sails way up there? It looks like really hard work to me.
It is really hard work. No, but actually a square rigger, they were built to make it more easy to set sail and strike sails. So you can strike all sails on any course with any wind. Same for setting, you can set any sail in any wind condition.
Really? Even going upwind you can set the square sails?
Yes. Okay. I mean, obviously we're not going as high as you might go with a modern racing yacht, but we can go upwind as well, yes.
Yeah. And typically now, say, coming to here, how many sails do you carry?
I mean, today there was no wind.
Okay.
But the day before, we would set all sails. There was no sail which was not set.
And is it mostly sailing you do, or do you have the engine on quite a lot?
No, we really like to sail. I mean, this is a sailing ship. It's traditionally rigged, and we will set always sails when it is possible.
Do you mind if we take a look down below?
No, you're very... You are more. So here's the entrance to the lower saloon.
So you come down, you've got like a mess or something here where you might eat.
Yeah, if you enter to the aft deck house, you come to the lower saloon. That's kind of the living room of the ship. We have a lot of books in German, English and Danish, because this is kind of the history of the last 30 years of the ship.
Yeah, I see, like you have navigation books, but you also have Harry Potter and
yeah,
whatever
exactly.
Else.
Yeah. And also we have all the movies and a bit more where the ship was taking part. And but mostly actually we're sailing in warm waters where the sun is shining, and then down here you can have some free time reading a book or playing some card games.
The ship has been involved in a couple of movies.
Yes, it was.
Which ones?
Obviously the Blue Lagoon as the most famous one, and White Squall, and then there's the Savage Island.
White Squall, who's the actor in that again?
Jeff Bridges as a captain. And yeah, obviously there's also a wife involved. But
it's a sail training ship, but it sinks in the Caribbean.
Yes, it will sink in the end. But actually, to be true, in many of the movies she's sinking. Same to the Blue Lagoon, she will set on fire and she will sink as well. And then the little couple,
the Brooke Shields and Christopher Atkins, if anybody remembers that one.
It's a very fancy cover, and it's a must-seen movie. If you have some bad taste, you can always watch it.
Forward to their cabins.
Yeah, and the next corridor we call the Wall Street, and you can have a little sneak look in there. There's a lot of space, so obviously you have a big bunk for two persons, a French bed, and you can also separate and one person can sleep aside. And every cabin has a big bathroom, a shower. Every cabin has a big bed and a shower and toilet in the cabin. And then forward you have the crew accommodation, and this is a bit more easy, but it's also still very comfortable.
Yeah. Is it very expensive for somebody to come on as a trainee?
I would say no. For what you get, it's not very expensive. And if you see also the cost of the ship, it is very cheap.
What are your typical trainees? Who are they?
Let's say it depends a bit from the cruising region. If we sail in the Baltic Sea, we have mostly Germans. If we sail in the Caribbean or also up here in Scotland, it's European people.
Mm.
But as the company is based in Germany, obviously we have a lot of German customers.
Yeah.
But we also have British, Scottish, Danish, and obviously we even have people from the Pacific, from Australia, because when it was on the British flag, the ship was sailing this Operation Drake, where people from all over the world were taking part.
How did you yourself come to be on the ship?
By accident, obviously. By a friend, I got told they're looking for a first mate, so in the night I was just writing a message from my phone, and it was more just, you know, by fun, and the next day they were calling me back. And then a couple of days later, I was on board.
Do you have qualifications in this area?
Yeah, for sure. I was in seafaring school. I have a master 500 gross tonnage for worldwide trading area.
Okay. How many ports have you been on this trip?
On this trip, we went to many ports in Scotland. And I joined also in Trondheim in Norway. Then we sailed to Arlesund, further to Shetland. And then we made a lot of little stops in many, many little ports.
So here in Dublin, it's a stopover for you. You're laying off crew and taking on new people.
Yes, it's a stopover. We have a new crew coming and crew leaving, and we have guests coming and guests leaving, and basically we are heading to the Caribbean.
Really? Nice trip. How long will it take?
We'll go from here to Cardiff, from Cardiff to Plymouth, and then from Plymouth we have like 1 week to Brest, and then from Brest we sail down to the Canary Islands, and we have another week cruising in the Canary Islands, and then we prepare for the ocean crossing, the Atlantic Ocean crossing, that we're gonna celebrate Christmas in the Caribbean.
Can I come?
Yeah, just stay on.
If you want to follow the ship, is there a website?
There is many websites, because these ships, they are now equipped with AES. It's an automatic identification system. There's like Marine Traffic or Ship Finder or Vessel Finder. There's many sites, and you just check in Eye of the Wind, and you can follow the ship wherever it is, as long as it's in VHF range.
Thanks to Captain Pitt Schmidt and all the crew on the Eye of the Wind. Solo sailor Tom Dolan has been on the programme a number of times. He's on one of the biggest sailing circuits in the world, the Figaro, sailing out of France. Now, Tom will be in Dublin for the first 2 weeks of October for a unique charity event. He's going to bring his boat, Smurfit Kappa, to Dublin, and he'll be taking people on trips for the benefit of the charity Sailing Into Wellness. I spoke to Tom earlier, and he told me about Sailing Into Wellness.
So it's an organisation that was set up a year or two ago, with the aim of helping people through sailing, so helping people with mental problems, the depression problems, drug addiction problems, and social insertion problems. So they use sailing to kind of get them out and get them active and to let them experience teamwork and to be at sea out in nature and things like that. So I think it's a great way of helping people.
They have a huge volunteer support from sailors throughout the country, and they've been on to you. You're coming to help them.
Yeah, exactly. So I have been thinking about it for a while, but you know what I do, the whole offshore sailing thing, a big part of it, a very big chunk of it is always looking for sponsorship and looking for money. So you're always going out, you know, talking about yourself and like, you know, help me, I want to do this, me, and it gets a bit heavy after a while, I suppose. So for a while I've been kind of, you know, thinking, you know, I'd like to do something to help someone else for a while, for a change, because I've had so much help down the way. And I never could really figure out what. And then I remember seeing it was set up, and I knew James already, who's one of the founders. And I saw it, and of course, unfortunately, like a lot of people in Ireland, in country Ireland and everything, you know, had first-hand experience of all these sort of problems, you know. And it just made sense. I suppose they were starting off, I was starting off. So I said to them, look, I'd love to help. How can I help? And
you're coming to Dublin next month. You're bringing the boat.
Exactly, yes. I'm going to bring the boat over to Dublin. A good way to get home, and I've never sailed a boat home. So a good way to get home without having to use an airplane. And so it's going to be available in Dún Laoghaire. the National Yacht Club are kindly putting us up, making a pontoon space and everything else needed. And we're going to offer sailing days, so people, corporate groups especially, or just groups of friends who would like to come out and sail top spec racing boat can come, and there's a voluntary donation of at least 600, but they can always give more, and everything will go to sailing, to wellness, and to helping people through sailing. So we've plenty of space.
You'll be doing those trips all through the first week of October.
Yeah. And as we know, it's in Dublin Bay, which is always windy, so I can't guarantee, but hopefully it'll be nice and windy and nice and fun. So.
And the boats, the Figaro boats, they're a new design this year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so the idea of it is it's a one design class, so it's for single landed offshore racing. So we go racing across oceans and seas. And the idea of it is that everyone has exactly the same boat. So it is really the highest level that there is in offshore sailing. And I'm lucky enough to be supported by an Irish company called Smurfit Kappa. So I have one and that I race out of France. And that's it, yeah. So we're bringing it home for the first time.
How many people will you be able to take per trip, and how many trips are you intending doing?
We can take maximum six people on board. And we're from the first 2 weeks, so the first week of October and the second week of October, we have days and half days for sail. So the best thing is to contact Sailing Into Wellness. People, we have kind of everything if they want.
How did the season go for you? Now, we spoke to you earlier in the year during the Figaro race that came to Ireland to Kinsale.
Yeah, it was up and down. I had some very good high points and some very low points.
You
I didn't
did.
Do that well. I did. But I just finished the last race of the season and I ended up coming fourth, which was the best result I've ever had in the class. Almost podium. I made a stupid stack lead mistake at the end, so it was good to finish on a high note anyway. So, but apart from that, the big race of the season, the solitaire, I didn't do that well. I took a wrong weather option.
Well, you had one leg that didn't go well, but then you had other legs. As you went on, it got better and better for you.
Yeah, it got better and better, exactly. But the problem is it's on accumulated time, so that it's the overall time of the four legs. So if you do one bad leg, the whole thing can be done. But at least I did get better. So that's kind of been the theme of this season, getting better towards the end. So I have to figure out a bit more regularity. I go fast. The thing is, I go fast, but sometimes I go fast in the wrong direction. that's never good.
What do you do now for the off-season?
Off-season, so I'm going to bring the boat back to Dublin to do this thing for Sailing Into Wellness and to hopefully bring a few people from Smurfit Kappa out sailing. And then back to France before the weather gets too dodgy, and a whole month of training in November, so training every week. And then I'm going to have to take the boat out of the water in December and take it apart and service it more or less, because it's had a rough last few months.
The solo racing season starts again in March and will take you right through to October next year.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
What's on your agenda now for next year?
After next year, I'm going to continue in this circuit for another 2 years at least, to try and really, because I think it's the best place to be to learn and perfect the trade. So it's really the place to be, the Formula One of offshore racing. So I'm going to keep at this for another 2 years, try to do well, try and learn as much as I can. And then a long-term goal is I have two really, is either do the Olympics, because it's going to be an Olympic sport in 2024.
This thing got handed offshore?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, which is kind of a good objective. And then the big one, which is but also needs a big more budget, is to race around the world. The one did Lobo single-handed.
Well, look, the best luck in Dublin, and Sailing Into Wellness, they're a fantastic charity.
Thanks a million. Yeah, it's great. And if anyone wants, there's plenty of space on board, so please do get in touch with them.
And you'll find details of Tom Dolan's trips out of Dunleary on the website www.sailingintowellness.ie. Recently, I was in a sailing race in a fairly large boat when the time came to raise the spinnaker. Now that's the large, colourful sail you use at the front of the boat when you're sailing downwind. It's a pretty complicated piece of equipment, and on this boat, called Corrine, she's an X46, it's about the size of a decent semi-detached house. A couple of weeks ago on the programme, Hugh Oram spoke about nautical phrases which have made it into our everyday speech. And on that day, on Corrine, I was struck by how much sailing has a language all of its own. If you take that sail, the spinnaker, just as one example. It has lots of parts. It has a head and a foot. It has a luff, a leech and a tack. It has panels, tapes, eyes. It has three eyes. And it doesn't have ropes, it has lines instead. They're a halyard, a sheet, a guy. It can even have a lazy sheet and a lazy guy. It has a pole, not to be confused with a boom, and that pole has an uphaul and a downhaul of its own. You can raise the spinnaker, lower it, you can fly it, float it, barber haul it, you can close haul it, and even snuff it. If it's luffed, that's bad. You can flog it, that's bad as well, and you can broach with it. That's really bad. You can jibe it, but you can't tack it. You can run with it, reach with it, but you can't beat. And that's just some of the language around one particular sail. Hugh Orman went back and looked at more terminology about sailing.
Sailing, especially yachting, has a language all its own, not just for the actual process of sailing, but also for all the equipment on boats. It's a bit like the language used by travellers and gypsies across Europe and beyond, very understandable to anyone in that community, but incomprehensible to anyone outside. It's exactly the same with sailing terms. Anyone who's into sailing will recognise and understand them immediately, but for anyone outside the world of sailing, they mean little, if anything. Commonplace sailing terms include abaft, further to the rear of the boat, amidships, between the stern and the bow, and dog watch. There are seven of these altogether, and the ones between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. and between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. are designed so that the same sailors aren't on duty at the end of the day. Another frequently used word is wake, the waves created behind a boat. There are well over 200 words and expressions specifically related to sailing, with most of them related to the equipment on board a boat. Some of that terminology has origins going back many centuries, such as luff, the forward edge of a sail. It comes from the word luff, used in both Middle English and Old French, the best part of 8 centuries ago, when it meant steering gear. The term lazy jacks refers to rigging on the main sail designed to help in handling that sail, and it too goes back to the time of medieval sailing ships. Sometimes words have been imported from other, more modern languages, such as passerelle, the gangway that connects the dockside to a yacht or other boat. It's a French word meaning gangplank. And one of the most essential places aboard a yacht is the head, or in plain English, the lavatory. This particular word goes back to the beginning of the 18th century, when Woodes Rogers, the then governor of the Bahamas, used the term in a book he wrote about sailing round the world. He commanded a privateer's expedition around the world, sponsored by merchants from Bristol who had lost ships to foreign privateers. Many of the words used for yachts remain intriguing, and some have passed into everyday use, like the bitter end, which is the utmost free end of the line. Another phrase that's passed into common use is if you don't like the cut of someone's jib. That, of course, is a nautical term. In the olden days of wooden sail-powered warships, they had their foresails, or jib sails, cut as flat as possible so they wouldn't be blown off course. And if the captain of an opposing warship spotted the foresails on a distant enemy ship, he might have decided he didn't like the cut of their jib while he still had enough time to escape. A catboat is a boat with one mast, flying no foresail. Kringles, not to be confused with Pringles, are open metal rings in a sail used as reefing points on that sail. A cunningham is a line used to adjust the forward edge of the mainsail. And rubbish on a boat is called gash, and no one knows exactly where that term came from. And if you've a dog on board, that's a metal fitting used to secure watertight doors, hatch covers and scuttles. A gooseneck is a metal fitting that attaches the boom to the mast. Hanks refers to clips on the front of the foresail. A trysail is a small, triangular fore and aft sail that's hoisted when winds are very high. Goosewinging is sailing downwind with the mainsail set on one side and the foresail on the other side. But if you're in irons, that's when the boat has been turned into the wind and has lost all momentum. And should you be into kedging, that's freeing a boat by dropping its anchor in deeper water and then pulling on that anchor. Should you need instant repairs, that's a jury rig when makeshift parts and materials are pressed into service until such time that proper repairs can be done. A few of the terms used on a yacht have been borrowed from other sources, such as religion. If you're looking at the pulpit on a boat, that's the rail on the deck around the bow. One or two sailing terms that sound positively poetic have come from ancient Greece, such as zephyr, a very light westerly wind. To my mind, it's absolutely fascinating how most of the names for pieces of equipment on yachts, as well as sailing terminology, have such ancient origins. They've survived to this day in everyday use by the sailing community, yet an esoteric language that has little, if any, meaning to landlubbers. All decent sailors will want to keep it that way.
But there is one particular term now in common use that people will recognise on a boat: when you drive it. But that's sailor slang for being on the helm.